Coming up on Fronteras, a survey of Latinos in San Diego County finds that many face discrimination.
Some nasty words also came up, like uneducated, lazy, and some very hurtful words.
A closer look at the experience of Latinos in San Diego. When photographer Wes Naiman invited friends to pose for a series of what was meant to be goofy portraits, neither he nor his models had any idea the images would end up reaching millions of people across the globe.
My outfit was a giant 1930s raccoon fur coat and tons of vintage jewelry. My idea was like a socialite who's continually trying to fit in until they kind of turn themselves into a monster.
An Albuquerque artist's photos of distorted faces go viral. That story during Fronteras, but first, the news. Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created through an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among seven public radio stations. I'm Crystal Chavez. San Diego celebrates its Hispanic roots through food, music, and tourist attractions such as Old Town, the city's original settlement when this was still Mexico. But a recent survey commissioned by KPBS and San Diego Magazine finds that the people who gave us this cultural legacy face discrimination today. Joe Replegal from our Fronteras desk has the story.
400 Latinos in San Diego County took the survey by phone earlier this year, and more than one in three said there was a lot or a great deal of discrimination against Latinos here. And there were other results that caught the attention of Tom Wong, who designed the survey. Wong is a political scientist at the University of California, San Diego. One of the survey questions asked Latino respondents to use three words to describe the average Latino.
We hear things like good, kind, caring, hardworking.
In fact, hardworking was by far the most popular response. Then respondents were asked how they thought the average San Diegan would describe Latinos or Hispanics. And again, hardworking was the top response, followed by good.
But some nasty words also came up, like uneducated, lazy, and some very hurtful words.
Immigrant, Mexican, and illegal were also among the top 10 answers to how Latinos feel they're perceived by the larger San Diego population. And many said they had real experiences with these stereotypes. One in four respondents said they had been called illegal at some point by someone who knew nothing about their background or immigration status. Out in the community, it's not hard to find Latinos with stories to tell. Maria Mora runs a hair salon in Normal Heights. She was born in Guadalajara, Mexico, but she's lived in San Diego for 22 years. I asked her if she had experienced discrimination in San Diego.
No me sentía bienvenida.
Mora says when she first came to San Diego, she didn't feel welcome. She told me about a time a guy in an elevator asked her if she had a green card.
Le dije, excuse me. Le digo, ¿es usted?
Are you an immigration official? She asked him. No, he said. Then why do you ask? She said. And that's just one such incident she's faced, Mora says. There are others. On a recent Tuesday morning, I stopped by a meeting of the North County Association of Latino Merchants in Escondido. Manny Alvarez serenaded the small group as members ate breakfast and chatted in English and Spanish. Bill De La Fuente called the meeting to order.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Buenos días a todos. Bienvenidos. Manny Alvarez came all the way up from Imperial Beach. He passed all the checkpoints and everything just fine.
Did you catch that? The opening joke of a business meeting is about Latinos being stopped at immigration checkpoints. After the meeting, I wanted to hear more from these business owners about how they experienced prejudice in San Diego. I asked Bill De La Fuente why he made that joke.
That's how sometimes you deal with hard situations like that. You got to joke about them a little bit.
Have you personally felt discrimination?
No, not since my hair turned gray.
De La Fuente did say he had felt some discrimination way back when he was a kid in San Francisco. But then, a few minutes later, he remembered something more recent.
Back in 1999, I was opening up a Latino bank here in the city of Escondido. And when I showed up to open up the bank for our first day, our opening, we found swastikas, Mexicans go home. I mean, just a bunch of terrible things right there.
Still, in general, the people I talked to said they thought Latinos faced less discrimination today than in the past. But they said it is still a problem. And yet, many said they don't let prejudice get to them. Here's Oscar Paz, a realtor in Escondido.
I'm the type of individual, I feel very confident with myself. I enter any door, and I don't pay attention to see if I'm going to be received with open arms or not.
Even if some people can brush it off, Tom Wong, the political scientist, says we need to start talking openly about discrimination and prejudice and segregation. Bring it out into the open.
We as individuals play a role in building the type of community that we may want, if that community we want is a more diverse and integrated place. I don't see how we can improve those things unless we first acknowledge that they exist.
Wong says he and his team plan to expand the survey to other racial and ethnic groups in San Diego to see just how inclusive or exclusive our community really is. In San Diego, I'm Jill Replogle.
What to expect when no one's expecting America's coming demographic disaster. That's the title of a new book by Jonathan V. Last. IBC's Senior Vice President Eddie Aldrete shares some of the author's concerns, mostly about how people in America are having fewer babies. That may sound counterintuitive to those stuck in traffic or waiting in long lines while Christmas shopping, but Aldrete says the stats show the country's fertility rate is declining.
It's an interesting phenomenon that what's happening across the country. People are getting married later. There's more people in the workforce. I mean, if you compare our workforce today to what it was in 1950 or 1960, you obviously have a lot more women in the workforce. And when there's more women in the workforce, I mean, if you go back to 1960, a lot of women were getting married at age 18 and they were having children by the age of 21. That's not the case anymore. More and more women are going to college. More couples are putting off getting married until later years. And then once they get married later, they tend to have fewer children because at that stage, they're both older. Both people in the couple.
So what exactly is the problem with this?
Well, the problem is that having fewer children in this country has a big impact on every aspect of life, economic, cultural, social, political, business, societal, you name it, it has an impact on our lives. First and foremost, having the fewer children is on the opposite edge of the baby boom generation. And the baby boom generation was following World War II, when all of a sudden a lot of our veterans were coming home and families were being created and people were having 3, 4, 5 children. And today that's not the case anymore. A lot of the baby boomers have already begun to retire. And the baby boom generation is defined by if you were born between 1946 and 1964. And there's 10 to 15 million boomers that are leaving the workforce. More boomers that are leaving the workforce than we have younger people entering the workforce. So question number one is, who fills the jobs that are left vacant by those 10 to 15 million people that are leaving the workforce? And that doesn't even begin to include all the new jobs that are created by our economy every year.
And sort of the problems with Social Security, where we have fewer taxpayers paying into that.
Exactly.
Now, how does immigration factor into this picture?
Well, it's at the heart of our workforce struggles that we have across the country. You name an industry, and I can probably identify a shortage in that industry. Most industries across this country, from manufacturing to aerospace to agriculture, the restaurant industry, the retail industry, we're seeing a massive shortage of workers. And again, that's because you have fewer people entering the workforce than you have they're retiring. And ironically, one of the industries that struggles with retirements the worst is the United States Border Patrol. According to the GAO, the Government Accounting Office, 51% of all Customs and Border Protection agents became eligible for retirement in 2012. So every time a member of Congress says, let's double or triple the size of the Border Patrol, the first question is, how are you going to do that? Because for everyone you hire, you're going to lose one to retirement. So it's hard to get in front of that curve.
So are you proposing more immigration, open the floodgates, let people come to help fill these jobs and for our economy?
No, I think we have to look. I think we should be selfish as a country. And I think we should ask instead of just, you know, what do we think we should do? I think we should ask, what do we need? If you look at what other countries are doing, they scour the rest of the world. We're in a global race for talent. You've heard people like Bill Gates, the former founder of the founder of Microsoft, and other leading people, Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook. You've heard them talk about that we need to staple a green card to the diploma of a lot of the foreign students who come here. Why should we give them the benefit of getting the best education in the world here in the United States and then allowing them to leave the country? They should be encouraged or even asked to stay in this country and give something back to the country that helped give them an education. So we have major workforce challenges, and if we're not having enough children, then you have to make that up by importing the labor.
So I can hear people who are opposed to immigration and especially illegal immigration saying, why don't we just encourage American citizens to have more babies?
Well, we've been trying to do that for years, and there's really no proof of it in the history of the world. Caesar Augustus tried charging a bachelor tax. Jonathan Lass talked about this in his book, and as a way to get more people to get married and to have more children. He also references how Russia adopted a motherhood medallion as a way. Japan and France and Italy and other countries have tried paying women per child. Japan pays women about $3,500 per year per child until the child reaches the age of 14. Now, here's what's interesting. In 2011, the largest manufacturer of diapers in Japan announced that for the first time ever that adult diapers outsold baby diapers. Now, that's a country that's an economic disaster in slow motion because they have reached the point of no return. They've hit the tipping point where most demographers agree that once you reach about 1.5, 1.6 children per adult female, that that's the tipping point, and Japan's at 1.2, 1.3.
All this being said, immigration reform is in limbo nationally speaking, but what would be your top proposal, reform proposal?
Well, first of all, we need to take a look and see what we need. Do we need more nuclear physicists? If we do, then allow more nuclear physicists to come in. If we need more bricklayers, then lower the quota on nuclear physicists and raise the quota on bricklayers. We need to take a hard look at what we need in this country. The law of supply and demand is very simple and very basic, and it's very true. And so what happens is, we saw a few years ago with the massive shortage of agricultural workers, we began to fortify our border. And every time you do something, it's like the law of physics. You have an equal and opposite reaction for every action. So what happened was when there was a shortage of agricultural workers in California, the agricultural producers started moving their operations to Mexico, where labor is plentiful. Google and Intel and eBay and many of the high-tech companies have large workforces in Canada on the other side of the border because we have such a low quota on software engineers, and they're a dime a dozen in Canada. And so why, in this difficult economic time period, why would we be sending low-skilled work to Mexico and high-skilled work to Canada when every single one of those jobs could stay right here in the United States? Again, I go back to the fact if we choose to be selfish, then let's take a look and do what's in the best interest of our country. Not what we feel is right because what our heart says, but literally what is in the best interest in this country. Too often people look at this issue from an emotional standpoint, and I don't. I look at it from a business and economic standpoint. And the reality is that the numbers don't lie. We're having fewer children, and that means fewer people entering the workforce, which means shortages, which means either difficulty getting products or prices are going to go up because they can't produce it fast enough.
I mean, all we hear is more boots on the ground, more border security, even border surges. And so that seems to be the tactic, especially in Texas.
Well, law enforcement is a very, very important part of this component. But unfortunately, some people get obsessed with that component and they're not looking at anything else. I sort of see this issue like an iceberg. People see the tip of the iceberg and they become obsessed with it and almost blinded by it because that's all they're staring at. But it's not the tip of the iceberg that can sink a ship. It's the large mass underneath the water that no one's paying attention to or that no one sees. And that's the same mass that has the potential to sink our economy if we don't start paying more attention to it. You know, just going back to your question about fewer children, Just to give you an example, my family, we're not average, but I'll use my family as an example. My father was from Del Rio. My mother was from Brownsville. My father was one of 11 children. My mother was one of 11 children. I'm one of five. My wife is one of five. And we have three. So we've gone from 11 to 5 down to 3. So you can see the inverted pyramid and how in many cases we criticize countries like China for having a one-child policy. But the reality is if you are an Anglo college-educated female that lives in an urban area in the United States, you have a one-child policy.
But an informal.
Yeah. Yes, it's by choice and not by decree.
Right.
I just think, you know, that we need to take a look at this issue from a business and economic standpoint and a demographic standpoint. If you follow the numbers, they will lead you to what the solution is. And the solution is quite simple. If you don't have enough people to fill certain jobs, then you have to find that human capital somewhere else. And if we're not out chasing that talent, other countries are. And every job in this country is important because they each add up and play a critical role to the success of our economy.
That was IBC's Senior Vice President Eddie Aldrete speaking about America's declining fertility rate. There's still more Fronteras coming up. An Albuquerque artist's photos of distorted faces go viral. We'll tell you more about it. Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. When Albuquerque photographer Wes Naiman invited friends to pose for a series of what was meant to be goofy portraits, neither he nor his models had any idea the images would end up reaching millions of people across the globe. From KUNM, Rita Daniels has a story of the artist's so-called Scotch Tape series.
Wes Naiman's first love was creative writing, but a while back he realized people are more likely to look at a single image, like a painting, than they are to sit down and read an entire book or essay. So he shifted his storytelling palette and began taking pictures.
I think I was able to apply my sort of weird narrative brain to photographs and be able to try to tell a story within one single frame.
Naiman makes a decent living shooting commercially, and when time allows, he dives into various creative projects for himself. The one that's catapulted him into a kind of a weird fame is the Scotch Tape series. The concept? Invite friends into his studio, use invisible tape to manipulate their faces, and photograph it.
You could pull the jowls out and spread the eyeball even wider and then bend the lips down. There was a lot of drooling going on here. It's hard to keep your saliva in your mouth.
The way the transparent tape causes face flesh to protrude gives the images a strange three-dimensional quality, and for the most part, people's expressions are frozen in these looks of astonishment.
They do their poses, and then at the end, I would try to have them remove the tape with only their facial muscles. So that way you get these really distorted chins moving around and eyeballs because they're trying to stretch the tape off with just their face.
Perhaps one of the best known of Naiman's photographs is the one of Rebecca Wiggins, a local actress. For the shoot, she arrived at his studio with a well-formed idea of what she wanted to do.
My outfit was a giant 1930s raccoon fur coat and tons of vintage jewelry. My idea was like a socialite who's continually trying to fit in until they kind of turn themselves into a monster.
When you look at the image Naiman shot of Rebecca, half her lip is taped all the way to the side of her smashed nose, and she's got this creepy, wide-eyed smile with one eye taped almost completely shut, the other eerily gawking at the viewer.
It's kind of a sad image when I think about what it meant to me doing it, you know? Mm-hmm. Like every human, I struggle with major physical insecurities, and it's just a statement on in trying to fit in, we end up bastardizing natural beauty. So maybe that's why it spoke to some people, especially women.
Naaman's work reached a wider audience when, while out on a local shoot photographing a Breaking Bad Walter White look-alike contest, he told another photographer from Wired magazine about the Scotch Tape series. As a result, Naaman ended up photographing some of their staff, and a layout of his work, including Rebecca's photo, was published in the magazine. After that, media outlets came calling to use the images. New York Daily News, Huffington Post. Rebecca got word from her baby sister.
She's like, "You're on BuzzFeed today." I was like, "What?" Yeah, and then it just blew up. It was crazy.
2 days later, I've got maybe 100 emails from China, Iran, Russia, Norway, Dubai, rolling in and kept going for months and months and months.
The project went viral, spreading to every continent. Rebecca's image was blown up 10 feet tall and hung on a lamppost at an art fair in Germany.
And I just was blown away. I was like, oh my God, this is getting beyond my control, my power. I don't even know how this is happening. Reaching a mass audience on such a massive scale with your artwork. I can cross that off my bucket list now, you know?
Recently, Naaman got a mystery check in the mail, and he had no idea what the money was for. It turns out it was from the Ripley's company, you know, of Ripley's Believe It or Not. Rebecca's image, along with a few other Scotch tapers, were published in their Dare to Look book, the annual penultimate collection of weird.
People like to be in Ripley's. That's a feather in their cap. That is high recognition to most people.
Edward Meyer is vice president of Ripley's Exhibits and Archives.
The photos are funny. I think you're going to have a gut reaction to them that this is pretty strange. What the heck is wrong with this? You know, the lady on the far right with her lip all coiled up, that makes me giggle.
The book is printed in 17 languages and distributed across the globe. Meanwhile, Naaman is already on to his next creative project, shooting portraits of people dressed in the oh-so-flattering Tidy Whiteys. In Albuquerque, I'm Rita Daniels.
You can see some of Naaman's Scotch Tape series images at fronterasdesk.org. You've been listening to Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KNAU Flagstaff, KRWG Las Cruces, KNPR Las Vegas, KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KUAZ Tucson, KXWT West Texas Public Radio, KRTS Marfa, and KSTX San Antonio. We're on Facebook. We invite you to join the conversations and post your thoughts about our stories. For the latest headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter at Fronteras Desk. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. This theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thank you for listening.